Tools of the Trade.
Indeed, that time of the week where we get a little bit geeky about situations. And we've got our old mate Dominic Hoey. How's it going, mate?
Good, how you guys?
Well, how do we describe what you are? Poet, writer, is that kind of the area? Rapper,
yeah.
Rapper from time to time?
No, not anymore.
Wordsmith? I like wordsmith.
Yeah, wordsmith's good.
No.
Yeah. I checked playwright on an application recently.
What
felt,
is it?
Felt a bit cheeky.
Right, you know? did you write like a... Like...
I wrote a show last
there you
year.
Go.
Yeah,
be.
Yeah.
Nice.
No one checks these things.
You're also doing workshops.
Mm.
And like, right. Oh, hang on, I'll just make sure my work.
Always classic mucking BFM, around with it. Don't touch it, mate. Don't touch it.
You're also doing sort of workshops, giving people guidance on how to write, or how
yeah,
does that,
I guess.
How does
that work? Well, how the workshop works is like I've made it so it's open to everyone. So we get people coming in who have published work, who some of them are even like sort of professional writers, and we have people coming in that have never picked up a pen before.
Right.
But I believe that, you know, like the fundamentals of writing, like, you know, even if you're like amazing, it's good to brush up on that stuff, and there'll be areas where you don't. You
new
know?
Techniques.
Yeah. And then, so I bring them all together, you know what I mean? And it seems to be working, you know, and I think like it's cool for, it just feels good having a, you know, real diverse group of people there, and it's real good energy.
Right on. Yeah, sweet. Well, what's the first lesson if I cruise into a writing workshop with Dominic?
What do we do at first? I guess I just talk about, a lot of it's just self-confidence.
Because
like I say, we get people coming in and been writing for 10 years who are like legit, you know, writers, but they just don't have that self-confidence.
Maybe in a rut or something? Or
yeah, and also there's this thing in writing where, I don't think it's the same in music, where people are like, you don't have it. There's an it, that you
oh, right.
which doesn't exist, but people say it does. So they might say to you, you know, you don't have this thing.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you do something, then they're like, oh, actually you do.
But also the audiences are going to be different just like anything else, right? So it might not be right for that person.
Totally, yeah, you know, it's totally subjective.
Yeah, and it's super
and
personable.
And there's trends as well, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Like I definitely notice in my work, I feel like it's much more sort of what I'm doing works much more today than it might have necessarily 10 years ago. Like
right.
I think, so that thing's that changes a lot as well.
Right. Nice.
So yeah, that's a big part. And then we just work. A big thing that I try and encourage people to do is to unlearn the relationship with words. So instead of thinking of words solely as units of meaning, so like how we're going to express yourself, thinking of more as like musical notes. And so we start taking words and pulling them apart, you know, with various exercises and putting them the wrong way.
Cool.
You know, taking phrases that don't make any sense, but then when you put them in this new context, they do. Which all sounds very airy-fairy.
That makes heaps of sense to me, because when somebody, say I've got like a, you know, I've got like a Thai friend that's, when he talks, it's so mint, because it's just the wrong words in the right places, and it's so good.
I actually use that example, because I used to cook with this chef from Poland, and he would say things like, you know, like they didn't really make sense grammatically, but they'd be beautiful.
Oh, right.
And people try and correct him. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, listen to the way.
He's talking in poetry, you know, and I've totally stolen shit he said and put it in poems, you know.
That's so true, though. You basically leave school and then you have to unlearn a lot of stuff from like the spiritual to the literal.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times, especially when people have gone through academia, and you know, obviously academia is great for a lot of things, but I think they get taught there's a wrong and right way oftentimes.
Very black and white. Often.
Yeah, so it's kind of unlearning some of that.
Nice.
And then I think the other thing is just sort of being like your harshest critic in the sense of editing. Because I think all writers do that thing where it's like, oh, this is good enough. I'll just sneak this in. No one's going to notice. And so sort of getting out of that habit and being like, if it's not good enough, just get rid of it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Where do you draw inspiration from when you're writing? Is it just copious amounts of reading, just reading? Or is it more just writing and the getting in the habit and practice of writing and going from there?
Yeah, I think that sort of habitually writing every day is really important, you know, just even keeping like the muscle strong. But for myself personally, like, I really think it's like, I usually write about that thing that's always on your tip of your tongue, or the thing you've been talking about with everyone for a while, you know, every time you go out and you see someone in the bar or at a party, you bring up the same thing. And then after sort of the fourth time, I'm like, oh, that's what I need to write about, you know, because that keeps coming up. And then usually you sort of, even though it's a real thing, you kind of drift off into fiction or lies or whatever you want to call it.
Right. Hey, I've asked you just sort of last minute to grab a couple of sweet examples of writing.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously it needs to be in the spoken sense for this radio situation to excel. And you've gone with, we've got King Missile, that Jesus was way cool. What do you dig about this?
This is what got me into writing pretty much.
Shit. Okay,
yeah, this was on BFM actually when I was like 12, and I remember listening to it because BFM used to be the only station that played rap music. So right. I used to listen to it when I was 11 and 12, and they'd play this guy and a few other spoken word artists. And I was like, oh, that's what I want to do, but I didn't really know what it was. I actually got to meet him in New York, and we had this really awkward dinner together.
Oh, I've heard it's never really what you want when you meet someone.
Tell me more about this. Sometimes it's better than expected. But okay, also so, sometimes
so I supported him when he came here, okay. And this is recently, right? Okay, yeah. And then I met him, and he's like, man, I really like what you're doing. And I just told him the story about, hey, you're the reason why I'm doing this.
Right.
Got along real good. I said, I'm going to be in New York like next week or whatever. He's like, let's get dinner. So I get there, and I message him, and he's like, yeah, we'll meet up. He turns up an hour late and just acts like he doesn't want to be there the whole time. And I'm like, dude, if you don't want to be here, like, you can go. He's like, no, it's fine. He's just like looking out the window, ignoring me.
Like you won it in a competition.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I was like, damn, man, way to sort of ruin it for me.
All right, well, let's shug that off. This is King Missile.
It's a great track anyway.
Jesus was way cool. Everybody liked Jesus. Everybody wanted to hang out with him. Anything he wanted to do, he did. He turned water into wine. And if he wanted to, he could have turned weed into marijuana, or sugar into cocaine, or vitamin pills into amphetamines. He walked on the water and swam on the land. He would tell these stories, and people would listen. He was really cool. You were blind or lame, you just went to Jesus and he would put his hands on you and you would be healed. That's so cool. He could have played guitar better than Hendrix. He could have told the future. He could have baked the most delicious cake in the world. He could have scored more goals than Wayne Gretzky. He could have danced better than Baryshnikov. Jesus could have been funnier than any comedian you can think of. Jesus was way cool. He told people to eat his body and drink his blood. That's so cool. Jesus was so cool. But then some people got jealous of how cool he was, so they killed him. But then he rose from the dead. He rose from the dead, danced around, and went up to heaven. I mean, that's so cool. Jesus was way cool. No wonder there are so many Christians.
Try not to think about that one, eh? That's quite a thoughty number, that King Missile. Jesus was way cool.
Now, Dominic, we've got you in because you are, we should mention, you are part of the Going West Writers Festival, which is happening all this month, but this weekend...
John's got the program in front of him, everyone.
There's actually a chock-a-block weekend full of a whole lot of speaking events, and you are speaking on Sunday morning at 10 a.m., at an event called How Was Your First Time? Now what's the idea behind this whole lineup? Because I noticed there's four of you. There's Michael Stevens, there's Annalise Jockums, and there's Sonia Wilson as well. What are you guys all speaking about?
So I guess we're all first time authors. So we want us to have a chat about that and how, because there's this misconception, I think, that writing a book is super hard.
Yes.
But I don't think it's any harder than making an album or whatever else you got to, you know, whatever other creative venture you want to go on. Like, I found making albums way harder than writing a book. But so, yeah, I guess we're just going to talk about that and how we did it. And because I know that Annalise came through the Victoria IML, Institute of Modern Letters. whereas, you know, like obviously I'm self-taught and stuff and I don't know about the other person, but so I think we all got there in different ways.
Is the hardest thing getting published? Is that the hardest thing to do?
Yeah, like before, because getting that published wasn't too difficult, but the stuff I'd done before that, like all the poetry books, like no one wanted to touch it with a 10-foot pole.
You've got to tie it together somehow in one big scenario.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I guess it's like, I suppose when you're doing spoken word that's political and you kind of can't spell properly, and it's just kind of, you know, I suppose I wasn't like the sort of golden goose to a lot of those publishers. Yeah. But I think also what I learned from doing, because I did a poetry book before that, and what I realized is that you may as well just do it yourself, really. Oftentimes, because, do you know what I mean? You can now. Like, the internet's an amazing place sometimes.
What was your first book? It was the Iceland, what was it called?
Iceland. So that's the first novel, but I did two poetry books before that.
Oh, nice.
Did all right.
And you were just saying you're just down in Dunedin working on your next one.
Yeah. Sweet. Yeah, I got the first draft. I'm on the second draft now.
Are you finding it way more fluid doing the second one, second album kind of thing?
Yeah, totally, because you're like, oh, let's not go down that fucking dead-end street again, you know?
Why have you gone down to Dunedin? Is it just because it's so bleak down there and inspiring?
What is your problem with Dunedin?
That definitely helped. Like, I didn't want to go outside much. I just wanted to get out of, because I knew that I wanted to write 60,000 words in 2 months, so like I knew I couldn't do that in
Is that a standard, by the way? What's the standard of a book?
A novel, I guess, is anywhere from 45 to like up.
Yeah.
You know, okay. Like Iceland was 65 or 70, I think.
Right.
So 60, I think, is like a good benchmark.
Nice.
And then, so I just went down there and just wrote with, it was only with Chili, my dog.
Nice. This dog that you've got on your persons right now?
Yeah, it's covered in fleas.
But it's mellow. It's mellow.
He's cool, eh?
Does he speak?
He'll attack you occasionally.
I don't want to rock him up for like no reason, just so I can get a bark out of him. But there is a dog in the room, everyone, just so you know.
So did you go down to Dunedin with an idea for the story in mind?
Yeah, so what I did this time, which is different in Iceland, is like I just had the idea for maybe 6 months and just kept on thinking about it and telling people about it and thinking about this character that I wanted to write. And so by the time I got down there, like, I'm not going to say it was easy because it wasn't, but it was definitely like I knew the character really well by that point, and I knew what she was like and what she would want to do and what she didn't want to do, how she'd speak and stuff. So that it was actually quite fun because I'm like, finally I get to sort of inhabit this character and see where it's going to go and all that kind of jazz.
Okay.
Nice. Hey, we actually, by the way, everyone listening, we do have a double pass to How Was Your First Time out there at Tetarangi War Memorial Hall. On Sunday the 16th of September. If you are keen to go, it sounds like your cup of tea.
10 a.m. You'll be up. You probably would have mowed the lawns by this time.
Plenty of eye contact.
It's right by my house, so it's alright. It's like 15 minutes walk from my house.
Nice.
Otherwise, be a hassle.
Shoot us a text on 53 95 if you'd like to go head along to that listener.
Yeah, I was just thinking, what sort of pearls of wisdom? I know we sort of touched on this at the start of the interview, but is there anything that you would like to share with the listeners that are listening right now that you might be sharing at your little How Was Your First Time?
I think just do it. Like, if you want to do something, just do it. You know what I mean? And I know that sounds super obvious, but not many people do, you know what I mean? And don't listen to people that tell you can't do it, you know? Like, only take on that advice which hits you in the gut,
right?
Good or bad, you know what I mean? Like, same with constructive criticism. Don't listen to all of it. It's just the one that gets you.
How are you, what's the vibe with just kind of writing on the go? Do you mostly do all your writing straight into the computer, or do you use a vintage typewriter that makes such a noise, or do you just like write little notes and then you get
I'm dyslexic, so yeah, I do everything on computer, otherwise it's just garbage.
Okay, I was going to ask what your handwriting's like.
Actually. Oh, it's so bad. It's so bad. So yeah, computers, like word processing is the only reason why I can write novels, you know what I mean?
Totally, fair enough.
So yeah, but I think if you're thinking about doing it, I think just do it and just become a nerd.
Well, like, if you're thinking about doing it, maybe head out to this
there you go.
This is my first time, right? It makes the most sense, really, because then you'll get like you're getting four brand new to the sceners as well. That basically they're like a few steps ahead of potentially where you're at, so you can see.
And Annalise is awesome too. I was hanging out with her in the Christchurch Writers Festival, and
nice.
And her book's book Baby. If you haven't read it, you should check it out.
Okay, cool. Hey, we got one more. I had you grab two. What would you say here? Spoken word style tracks. Second one here is the old mate Jill Scott Heron. Or Gil, is it Gil?
I think it's Gil.
Gil. And it's a massive classic.
Yeah.
The revolution will not be televised. Do Do you want to talk about this, or would you just let
yeah, I guess it was just like, I just feel like we're saying, I feel like it's so old. Like, what is it, 74 or something?
It's still ripping.
And it's just still so dope.
Speaking straight to you, basically.
And the technique that he uses in this is called anaphora, and we teach that in the writing course, and it's just like, he, you know, the revolution will not be televised, and he keeps going back to the same phrase.
Right, it's hammer it home.
It's a real cool way to just like, if you've got like a random thought, to sort of bring it into some kind of structure.
Right, so actually, I see poems.
Poems?
Poetic people do this a lot. Poets.
Yeah, lots of the rappers do it. Yeah, so there's a little bit of nerdy tidbit for you.
Oh, look, we've got a winner here for the tickets. Well done, we'll be in touch. Hey, Dom, thanks so much for coming in, mate.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Hey, did you hit, just do you have a little plug?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I'm doing a gig on the 21st at Wine Cellar with my mate Hadassah Grace, who's coming up from Wellington. She's
sweet
incredible.
Name.
Yeah, she's an amazing poet. And then we've got a couple of young poets, Liam and Gabby, who are going to open up as well. So
21st, that's Friday night?
Yeah, Friday night, 8 o'clock, Wine Cellar,
nice.
Poetry, drinking.
Red wine. And
Chili might be there, so you can meet him.
Sweet.
Nice.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, cheers, mate.
Be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nubs. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry Arm, woman liberationist, and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
That was Tools of the Trade.